Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, April the 11th. Maybe I should say January the 11th, because from what it looks like where I'm sitting, it looks a lot like January. A winter storm warning in effect for southern Wisconsin. Much of Wisconsin, though, will get dumped on all day today. Southern Wisconsin, 6 to 12 inches of snow by tonight before this is over. 2 to 4 inches for northern Wisconsin. Hope you like shoveling snow. But we won't talk about the weather this hour, as we did earlier this morning. We're going to talk about the Don Imus mess, which continues to develop since he called members of the Rutgers women's basketball team nappy-headed hoes. And then when it became apparent that people were not amused by that, he said this.
I want to take a moment to apologize for an insensitive and ill-conceived remark we made the other morning referring to the Rutgers women's basketball team. It was completely inappropriate, and we can understand why people were offended. Our characterization was thoughtless and stupid, so, and we're sorry.
Well, he continued to apologize on appearances on Al Sharpton's radio show, on the Today Show yesterday. He was suspended for 2 weeks by MSNBC and CBS Radio, a suspension that I think starts on Monday. But the calls for his firing continue. Some advertisers are pulling ads. Staples and Procter & Gamble announced yesterday they're not advertising with Don Imus anymore. Politicians and journalists are being asked if they will appear on his show, if he has a show in the future. Some are saying yes, others no, at least not right now. Some are waiting to see how a meeting goes between the Rutgers team and Imus, a meeting that the women agreed to yesterday and announced at a news conference, along with talking about how hurtful his remarks were to them. Here is the captain of the Rutgers team, Essence Carson, at yesterday's news conference.
We just hope to come to some type of understanding of what the remarks really entailed, his reasons why they were said. And we just like to express our great hurt, the sadness that has brought to us. Is more than the game of basketball. It's more than Rutgers women's basketball team. As Coach Stringer said, we realize that it's about women across the world, across this nation.
So we ask you this hour, what do you think should happen to Don Imus? Should he be fired, or is saying he is sorry good enough? Is too much being made about this story, or not enough? Have you listened to Don Imus or watched Don Imus, and will you continue or not? Our guest this hour will not. He is Eugene Kane, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His recent piece, yesterday in fact, was on this topic, headlined, Imus Can Talk, But We Don't Have to Listen. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. So you, as you pointed out in the column, Eugene, you started watching Imus just recently, right? Why?
A few months ago. Mm-hmm. I've always been the kind of person who doesn't really go for news in the morning. I usually go for SportsCenter, but I was looking for a substitute since SportsCenter just runs the same program basically for a morning block of almost like 3-4 hours. You got to find something new to watch eventually. And I just kind of wandered onto it. And it was interesting mainly because of the top-level guests he had, particularly when it's around political season, for the midterms last fall. He would get just about the top writers, reporters, even politicians. And it just for a journalist, it was a very newsy program, although I also saw it as sort of like a sort of dual competing show. Is always is a morning zoo along with a serious political show. But, you know, I think most people accepted it like that until eventually he just blew up, I guess.
Yeah, so you missed the morning, though, last week when he made the remarks about the Rutgers team.
Yeah, I was not watching that morning. Yeah.
But when you heard about the comment, what was your reaction?
Well, it did strike me as something he would say, because the thing is, he basically does always seem to, and it's not necessarily him, even when you hear the transcript, it's this morning zoo crew of wacky newsreaders and producers that kind of sit around him, they chime in, and they almost inevitably will go for the lowest common denominator. And I've always noticed that it was sort of, if they could do something hateful towards women or minorities, you know, and I know in their minds it was always supposed to be funny because that's, they would lead off the crack and everybody just giggle around it. So I knew what that was about. It did not surprise me. And I just, my only surprise was whether he would actually, you know, have to own up or fess up to it with this one when so many others just have seemed to just kind of, he just kind of says it and just moves on.
Yeah, I wonder if you have any thoughts on that. He has made all sorts of controversial comments in the past, including, you know, racial comments like calling Gwen Ifill a cleaning woman in the past.
He denies that, but I remember the reference, and I remember at the time when people were talking about it, and there's a New York Times journalist, William Roden, he just called him a quota hire because he didn't like, I guess, something he had written. So, and there's been numerous, I got calls from people who was hurt, who have listened to him for years, and they've kind of pointed out. There have been others. So, I mean, the attitude of some people that he's getting caught up just on this particular incident, and I think the anger from people about this particular incident is basically linked to the fact that, well, this is a guy who's had almost a record of this stuff, and nothing ever happens to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it different that people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson are calling for him to be fired this time? I'm not sure if they did the last time.
I'm not sure, and I don't really think there probably was much done. I think what had happened, and again, this is one more I think about it, this is sort of like a tipping point year for these kind of comments. I mean, in the past, someone makes a comment, it's kind of isolated, people react to that, and you move on. I think this year, or these last few months, there has been this, you know, accumulation of whether it's Mel Gibson or Michael Richards or the guy on Grey's Anatomy. There's just been so many that have hit the headlines. I think the accumulative effect made Imus, you know, the next in line, where people just kind of had to acknowledge that, okay, you know, there is a clear, at least, pattern of discipline in these cases, at least in most cases. Richard lost his career, had to apologize, and Mel Gibson didn't really suffer that much when you really look at it because he just had another big movie since that happened. But I think particularly for Jackson and Sharpton, they saw that if you were ever going to get a major corporation to basically address this, this was the time to do it. And so far, I mean, both of them don't seem to be happy with 2 weeks suspension. But, again, I think there's a possibility there could be more, or there could be a sort of death penalty enacted by the cable station or even the radio station telling him, okay, this is your last chance. And that would be a very different scenario.
Yeah. Your thoughts on it, though, Eugene Kane, is a two-week suspension, is that a punishment that that meets the crime?
I'm not necessarily into doling out punishments for this stuff. I'm almost always, and there have been a number of incidents that I've written about, and I always have my say as to whether I think it was a good thing to say, a bad thing to say. I've said I think that Imus's comment was basically just because it was aimed at this innocent group of female athletes. I just thought it was very hard, you know, it was mean-spirited, it was offensive, and yes, it was racist. But in terms of punishment, the punishment should, to me, is what all punishment for any kind of hateful speech should be. I mean, you address it, you denounce it, and then you don't go back to that person anymore. I mean, I don't really call for people to get fired because they say something. I'm thinking it would be much more valuable to society if we all just had the right to say what we want to say and debate it and, you know, talk about it. So, again, I don't really design punishments for people like that. I'm sort of an absolute defender of free speech because no matter what happens, you can always address it. I mean, if enough people agree that, yeah, this guy has gotten away with saying hateful stuff, I don't see then why anyone who doesn't agree with hateful speech would continue to support him.
And you are going to, based on this latest incident with Imus, you're making the decision to not watch him anymore.
Well, go back to SportsCenter, I guess. Watch the SportsCenter reruns. And again, to be honest, you know, when he comes back, if there's a buzz about what he's actually going to do, that might be the way to, you know, and I can always say as a journalist, I got to find out what's happening. I mean, you know, you don't just kind of put a blindfold on as a journalist if you're still looking to write about it. So there might be times in the future I check in to see what he's doing.
We're talking with Eugene Kane, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about the mess that Don Imus is in for making disparaging, racist remarks last week on his nationally syndicated radio program that's also simulcast on MSNBC television when he called the women's Rutgers basketball team nappy-headed hoes. And now has been apologizing repeatedly for those remarks, but the heat is still on. Was suspended for 2 weeks by CBS and MSNBC. Now we hear that some major advertisers are pulling ads. The calls for his firing continue from folks like Reverend Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. We wonder what you think, your reaction to all of this. Do you think too much is being made of this, or maybe not enough? We are getting the thoughts of Milwaukee Journal Sentinel columnist Eugene Kane, who will answer your questions and respond to your views at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Peter Donald's in for Kathleen Dunn coming up after 9 o'clock. Peter will be talking with the author of Why Marriage Matters, America, Equality, and Gay People's Right to Marry. That's coming up after 9. We're talking about Don Imus and what should happen to Don Imus in light of those racist remarks that he made the other day about the female basketball team from Rutgers University. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Eugene Kane, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, wrote a column on this in yesterday's paper, Imus Can Talk, But We Don't Have to Listen. Jason in Milwaukee is with us next. First. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was just wondering, I'm not saying that what he said was right, and I do think it was wrong, and it was probably hurtful to them, but I was just wondering as to what actual racist remark did he make?
Nappy-headed hoes?
I've never actually thought that nappy-headed was actually a racist remark. I was just wondering if maybe you could explain that to me. Like I said, I'm not saying that it was right at all what he said. It was wrong, but I guess maybe I'm just misunderstanding the...
Yeah, what? All right.
I've heard that from some people. Usually I hear it from white people. I've never heard any black person tell me that they are confused that when a white person says nappy-headed hoes, that's not a racial insult. But to treat the question seriously, nappy-headed is referring to the quality of black people's head. And if you know anything about the racist stereotypes from decades ago, that's what makes it so ridiculous. Imus is reaching back decades. Nappy-headed in reference to, you know, the dolls, the minstrel shows, the way of disparaging black people's head. So, I mean, clearly in the context, if you listen to what he's saying, I mean, black women, a lot of them have to process their hair in order it to be straight. And I mean, it's a sign of ignorance between the races if, in fact, a lot of white people don't really think nappy-headed was an insult. I have no way of looking into this guy's, you know, heart to see whether he's just throwing that out there. I have had white people suggest to me, oh, nothing he said was racist. So I just think there's a lot of denial going on if people are saying, well, the technical term for nappy-headed or... And the other thing you hear is that, well, blacks call each other a lot of words, too. And I think that's part of this debate, the fact that Imus, again, is being jumped on, just like Michael Richard, for saying something that occasionally you'll hear black people say to each other. But, I think that's sort of like a different situation, and it's something, you know, that needs to be talked about itself, but certainly not to divert attention from what Imus did. He's a professional broadcaster for 40 years. He meant it in a racially derogatory way to address the majority black players he saw playing for Rutgers basketball team. I mean, there's just no mistaking that, I don't think.
Yeah, that there has been talk about the term, especially hoes and other disparaging ways to describe women in rap music, in hip-hop music. There is a difference, you think, Eugene?
Yeah, and by comedian, I've got people who, well, Chris Rock says it, and I don't think Chris Rock has ever said it.
that way. The thing to understand is the rap music and everything, I mean, it is in there. Black adults that I know, the N-word, they rejected calling, you know, women that, bitches and hoes, rejected calling black people the N-word. There's a debate on that. But the problem with linking this with Imus, in songs it's done in a benign way, in comedians' jokes it's done with a point to reach a punchline. This one was a throwaway reference by a broadcaster aimed, and I guess this is what makes people respond to it, aimed at these women. What did they do to earn this kind of, you know, degradation, this sort of nationwide, you know, attack on them? That is, it's the mean-spirited part. And all of these women, I mean, they reacted to this nappy-headed hoes at this moment where they were on the verge of winning, you know, a national championship. Mm-hmm. And for him to use it in that, and it's no question he did it to address a group of black women that he saw on TV, that he saw as being rough-looking because some of them had tattoos, as though they're the only young people in this society who have tattoos these days. Mm-hmm. So, again, the thing about other language used by blacks, it's like the N-word debate that I've been involved in, and I think I've actually been on your show and talked about before. Mm-hmm. My attitude is that certainly is that we've reached a point where a lot of black people don't like that anymore, but we've always understood that when it's used, quote-unquote, within your family, it's not as offensive as someone else saying it. So I don't think most white people don't understand that, because I know there are other ethnic groups that call each other kind of coarse words across the dinner table, and they're sometimes in jest. And if you're an outsider, you see it, and you wonder, why are they calling each other names? That has always been the way certain words are treated within any communities. So to link those with, well, Imus is just using the words he hears other black people. Again, I just think that's disingenuous. Yeah. And it's almost, you know, amazing that people would throw up that defense. But I know they're going to do it. And it is a valid subject to get into at some point for black people to not react so strongly to these words when they're used by white people, but also tell your children and younger black people to stop using them also.
Thank you, Jason. Connie in Portage on a related topic here. Connie, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, what I feel is that Al Sharpton is a good friend of Ludacris. And Ludacris is the most vile, and he says, get a hoe, get a hoe, get a hoe. Why is Al Sharpton never coming out and saying anything against that? But the minute a white person does something, boom, there they are. And that's what aggravates me. And as nappy-headed, I think, was wrong. And it's like telling me my children have done something wrong, and the blacks call each other that. That's fine. That's the way I feel. But I think Al Sharpton should come out against some of these rap singers, and I'll listen to my response off the air, okay?
Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure how closely people follow Ludacris and all like this, but I will tell you, Al Sharpton, because I've heard that, too, about Al and Jesse, who are these, like, human red hot buttons themselves. The fact is, Al Sharpton has, for a number of years, launched, I know with the N-word, he's launched a campaign to stop young people using the N-word on records. I know for a fact Al Sharpton has spoken out against the language on rap records. He did it back when the late C. Dolores Tucker, who was a legislator in Pennsylvania, started a campaign against certain rappers, and she was kind of vilified by black rappers for it. So I think a lot of people really have no clue what Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson have been saying about these things for years, and I say literally for years. And, you know, she says he's friends with Ludacris. You might see a picture of them together, because I think a lot of rappers do respect Sharpton and Jackson. I don't know if we go as far to say that they're all buddy-buddy friends who hang around together and speak the same language. Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson are at least, you know, 30 to 40 years older than a lot of these rappers. So they really don't share any of their, you know, hip-hop mentality. And every time I've seen them address the subject, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton speak out against the abusive language that rappers use towards women. I guess that's the only thing I can answer with that.
Get your response to this email, Eugene. William in Green Bay says, what concerns me most about the Imus issue is the response that the networks gave who employ him. They gave him a 2-week suspension, which doesn't start until next week. If they were truly concerned about his behavior, the suspension would have started immediately. The message seems to be that they were only protecting themselves and accepted Imus' stupid remarks until it hit the fan. Your response to that, Eugene Cain? The 2-week suspension starting next week. Was that too little, too late?
Well, the weird thing is that I guess he has been on all week. So it is amazing to me that starting next week, he'll be beginning to pay for what he said almost a week ago. And it is about the people who employ him. And it's MSNBC, which is the cable part, which broadcasts his show to, like, my estimates that I've heard are, like, just a handful, 350,000 people get to watch his show. But the people who listen to his show on the radio, that's in the millions because it's over 70 stations nationwide. So, again, getting back to Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, I would guarantee you if Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton hadn't gotten involved, he still wouldn't be facing any penalty. Yeah. So I think that is for a lot of black people. We hear all this criticism about Jesse and Al, but Lord help them, Lord bless them. Whenever they get involved, you do get some reaction. But, again, getting back to the point, sure, they drug their feet, his bosses, held their fingers up in the air to see which way the wind was blowing. And again, this 2-week thing, I see it as, you know, a starting point for the next phase of his career, which I think will be he'll be under a sort of death penalty, that if you mess up again, that's going to be it. And I really don't think, at least not with all of his wacky group of comrades around him, I don't think they can do the same show. So that raises the question of whether it'll be the same show, whether it'll be as good a show, whether he'll see it as being worth it. And the more important thing that I hope, you know, eventually we get into is his guests.
Yeah,
the attraction is his guests. So if they keep coming, there's going to be a chance that he could survive. But
you think that a journalist or a politician should think twice before appearing on this program in the future, if there is a future for the program?
I can't imagine another scenario where someone running for president of the United States gets informed that, okay, this particular venue or person has now all of a sudden become radioactive. And think about politics. Once somebody becomes radioactive, they totally steer clear of them. And it's usually accepted because, I mean, it wouldn't be a move where you would be seen as losing faith. Most people, I think, would applaud it. So it's amazing to me. John McCain apparently still wants to come on. Sign of me, John McCain knows he's never going to be president, so why should he, you know, tick off IMUS? I'm pretty sure Hillary and Obama won't be coming through unless, you know, they can get him to prostrate himself or do some real, you know, atonement on air that is just going to be so ridiculous, everybody will tune in to watch that. And journalists, I mean, I admire writers like Frank Rich in the New York Times and I guess the Tim Russert guy on NBC who runs their political coverage. They come on there, and it's an actual love fest between them and IMUS, and it's kidding and joking. And I just don't see how you can do that anymore after this. I mean, even if you want to present yourself as a loyal friend, loyalty is fine. But, I mean, the bottom line is that the loyalty isn't what was getting them on the show. It was the exposure. And there are other places you can go for exposure.
Let's go to Mohammed in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Kane. For rappers, black rappers don't own the music industry that they are employed by. It's another form of Hollywood shuffle. But I attended in the 90s a number of programs. I've even attended one since I've been here in Madison. This sponsored by the Professor Richard Davis, the jazz bassist. And they pretty much all define racism as being race prejudice plus power. And the difference in Don Imus saying what he said is that he represents an institution of power, the media. And so for people who don't get it, you know, why there's an uproar in what he said, it's clearly these type of disparaging remarks, you know, even if some of them exist in the African-American community. African-Americans aren't the first people who call themselves the N-word. So it's a funny kind of a dance that people do, but what I think is instructive with Mr. Imus is it really allows us to see, because we get into discussions where Caucasian people sometimes want to talk to us like, What's your problem? Racism doesn't exist anymore. And when somebody comes out and says something like this, it lets you know, especially a person like myself who has 5 daughters, I took it very personal. And, you know, if I had anything to say to Mr. Imus, I would let him know. My daughters are not hoes. and they have the hair that they were born with. And for anybody to cast that type of dispersion about a person based on something that has no intelligence whatsoever, he's getting, I think, what we should all expect.
Thank you, Mohammed, for your perspective. Eugene Kane, what do you think about Don Imus representing power being on the media?
Well, clearly that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been locally in Milwaukee radio hosts and even on the black radio stations who cause little flaps with what they say on the air. And I essentially always defend people's right to say what they want, as long as people have the right to speak up against them. That's just the way I deal with it. But I also look at it in terms of perspective, because a lot of times these local guys, they would compare them to somebody like Rush Limbaugh, who's talking about black quarterbacks, and now I guess they'll compare him to Imus. In terms of your reach, and again, I already talked about Imus's television reach isn't really all that big comparatively, but his radio audience is enormous. That is why people, I think, are so upset, because when these people who have a microphone that reaches like millions of people start saying this stuff, it is different than a rapper putting it in an album or a record and it's all out of context and it's just considered part of his music, where Imus is making a directed comment aimed at someone in the news, and in the next hour he might have a presidential candidate on his show. So again, I know people, as someone who writes about race, and I get this thing, oh, you're just obsessed with race and that's all you write about, and most people don't think about race that much anymore. When the Michael Richards and Don Imus has come up, there's a little bit of vindication, because it makes me see that, yeah, the issues I write about are still very valid and even more important to write about, because clearly some people still just don't get it. And I get a little bit of that wherever I talk about this subject, because there are still white people who, I guess, see it as an attack on them when you attack Imus for this, and they leap to Imus's defense, I think, because they're leaping to the defense of all white people. And I'm not saying that, you know, anybody other than Imus doesn't need to feel under attack or assault by minorities because of this. But we are assaulting the attitudes that make it so that a guy on the radio can say this and still have some people. And he's got some very big names who are defending him. So, and again, getting back to the point of the journalist, my attitude is that it's the guests now who have to make a decision whether this guy survives or not.
Mohammed, thanks again for the call. Frank in Oshkosh is with us. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Thank you for letting me ask my question. And my question is, and I think the journalist, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, mentioned it clearly, is that white people are always surprised, you know, when racism comes up in that, because they think, oh, we don't have racism. I was doing some demographic work for a class, and I was looking at the city of Chicago and Atlanta and San Francisco, and you can clearly see that we, in those cities, there's this income and demographic apartheid that divides the races. So my question is when some knucklehead makes a dumb comment, we talk about it, and racism, blah, 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 but then we stop. Do you see what my question is? Why do we stop? Why do we not continue to speak about this real racist apartheid, especially income and demographic apartheid that our country continues to live in? And maybe if you could answer that question.
That's an easy question to answer.
Yeah, really.
Eugene Kane is our guest. He is a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Eugene?
Well, I mean, it sounds like the study you're doing would show the same results if you use just about any major city in the country, including Milwaukee. There is that sort of separation between races and income levels, and there is creating a pool or class of people who nobody really cares about. I mean, and that mainly is linked in terms of income as opposed to race. I think when these flashpoints happen, everybody talks about it, because I think it gets, and that's the best result, because it does get people talking about our differences and this racial stuff. And I really do think it ends up being valuable. I also think that it gets kind of soul-weary for a lot of people who just are not used to doing it. So immediately after the furor dies down, they do go on to other things. Again, I'm a journalist who regularly returns to these subjects, and what I get from white people is, oh, you're bumming me out with this. Don't keep writing about this. Why do you have to write about it? So, I mean, I see it as almost a lonely battle, and I'm not saying I'm the only journalist who does it, or even that only black journalists do it, because I think some white journalists do it. But, I mean, there's clearly a sense that majority of people really, and even some black people, just get tired of really dealing with it. They'd rather kind of stick their head in the sand and only deal with it when something comes up. So, I mean, that is my only answer to the question. I mean, there are a lot of different complicated issues connected to all this, but until enough people really get willing to really keep it out on the table and discuss it, and every year there's going to be, you know, big commissions and panels on race, and I'll be invited to a couple of them, and that's my sign that there are people constantly doing this work. But at the same time, it never reaches the fever pitch in the public's mind unless it's some big scandal like this Don Imus thing or the Michael Richards thing or the Mel Gibson thing.
We are talking with Eugene Cain. He is a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His most recent column was Imus Can Talk, But We Don't Have to Listen, in which he writes about the mess that Don Imus is in and the disparaging racist remarks that Imus made about the women's basketball team from Rutgers University and the fallout from that. 1-800-642-1234 is our toll-free number if you have a question or thought about this. Should Don Imus be fired? Should people just tune him out? What are your thoughts? Do you think too much is being made of this story, or maybe not enough? 263-1890, I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. You're listening to The Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Peter Donalds is in for Kathleen Dunn between 9 and 11. After 10, Peter will talk with his guest about whether or not religion should be taught in public schools. That's coming up. We're talking with Eugene Cain from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about the mess that Don Imus is in. We had a caller, Eugene, who wanted to say that she, I think it was a she, that she heard the comments that Imus made. I played a clip earlier in the program. She didn't think that the nappy-headed hose was the worst part of that particular morning, as bad as that might be, but that it just got worse as the program went on that particular day. And my husband also noted that to me, that that was a bad comment, but it was also about how tough and how hardened the women were, and their tattoos, and how much prettier the mm-hmm. other team was. I mean, it wasn't just that one comment. It was more than that.
Yeah, and he also mentioned something about jigaboos and wannabes, he's claiming to have been from the Spike Lee movie School Days that I saw, and I know those terms, and it wasn't used in the context he was doing. But again, it was an entire riff. And again, I remember, you know, the fact that, man, those were some rough-looking hoes, and then there's about tattoos again. The fact that young people have tattoos apparently freaked him out. And again, I know from looking at the shots of the Tennessee and the Rutgers team, there are a lot of African-American females on the matter of fact, the star player on the Tennessee team is a black woman. But clearly, at the point where he's looking at it, it's almost a suggestion that there were these pretty light-skinned or white players on the other team. And on Rutgers, they were dark-skinned, you know, black women with nappy hair. So, I mean, yeah, if your point is that there was a lot going on that morning, clearly there was, which makes it even more incredible to me. You got all these people kind of lining up to basically, you know, defend him. And the one thing that has kind of tweaked my consciousness by a couple people is that, to a large degree, as a man, I missed a lot of the most, you know, the most derogatory part of the comment was that it was aimed at women as opposed to even just black women. And I think a lot of male commentators, you know, who have reacted to this, I think a lot of black men reacted because it was an insult on black women. But, again, that's not taking into account the hurt that the black women, and by, you know, just by uniformity, all women take when a bunch of, you know, male talk show hosts decide that that's the most vile, evil way you can hurt a woman is to mm-hmm. call her a hoe. So yeah. There's a lot going on that morning, I suspect.
Craig in Onalaska is with us now. Hi, Craig. You're on the air.
Good morning. The comment that I have is that I found it very difficult to believe that Imus was stupid enough to say what he did. But I also find it very offensive that the media, for the last week or so, has been naming the school and the basketball team and then giving the comment that Imus made. To me, that's the media is becoming just as offensive in using that terminology and describing exactly who Imus, made the comment about.
You don't want to hear the actual phrase repeated. Is that what you're saying?
I don't have a problem with hearing, the thing about the hair and that other word. I'm not going to say it, but I do have a problem with the school and the basketball team being named every time that comment is made. I think they could say a black woman's basketball team was described as by. Because otherwise, you just keep dumping on those poor girls, those poor women.
Oh.
And I think that's offensive. I find it offensive. Yeah. I don't find it offensive that, what he said is being discussed. I think it should be discussed. But I don't think we need to keep rubbing those women's noses in what he said. And that's what the media is doing.
Yeah, I guess I always think who, what, where, when, why, that that you say who was involved. But what do you think, Eugene Keane?
No, that's just, I guess, a journalistic thing.
Yeah.
The bottom line is that in journalism, you give people the facts that you have. And the facts that you have about this story always include that it was Rutgers women. And because the media is not just one monolithic group, it's a lot of different groups. And the bottom line is that if one part of the media decided not to use the word, not to identify the team, somebody else would. And somebody would call that media and say, well, why aren't you naming it? These other people are naming it. So I understand that's probably good intentions of his point of view, but it's clearly not a journalist's point of view. A journalist's point of view is that you give people all the facts you have and, let them sort of make up their mind.
Yeah, your thoughts on the team agreeing to meet with Imus at soon to, I guess, hear his apology in person?
Well, I saw parts of the press conference. They're a very impressive group of young women. I think, Imus is probably in for some more agony when he, sits face-to-face with these young women because they're clearly angry but not total out of control. They're not devastated or shattered or crying. They spoke up firmly. They know what's happening, and I think it's to their credit they asked for a private meeting so it doesn't turn into some kind of, media circus or zoo. So, yeah, that was the perfect way to handle it. Okay, you want to talk about us. Now, people get very, you probably know, Joy, because you're a radio host. Some people just get very courageous and brave behind a microphone, particularly the more aggressive, attack jocks and everything. And I've always felt that if they had to actually sit across from an actual breathing human being that they're trying to denigrate, most of them don't have the guts to do it.
Yeah.
So now it's going to be Imus's turn to see if he's just as tough or tough talking when he's sitting across from the people that he offended.
I wonder if you think that the future, Don Imus's future, his career is dependent on whether the team forgives him.
No, I think, when you look at his record, and most of these so-called shock, he really made the transition from just a shock jock who did this all the time to someone who is perceived as sort of like a political insider and a political favorite. And that's really, I think, national broadcasting services. He is not as influential as he used to be, but he found this niche with these political types that I think was sustaining him. So, no, again, I think what's going to determine whether he's successful is whether his A-level political guests return to his show.
Yeah. Scott in La Crosse is with us now. Hi, Scott.
Hello. I don't know much about this guy. I've never heard one of his shows. I just wondered, now, he looks like he's towards the end of his career, and like your guest said, he was known for being edgy and causing, some problems. Is it possible that he was trying to be edgy and maybe hip and kind of trying to show that he's still with modern times, and he blurted out some comments that he had heard before, not really realizing the true meaning of what he said, and then now that he figured out what he said was really wrong, he's either not man enough to stand up and say, I'm out of touch, or is he just that ignorant?
An old guy who was trying to be hip, Eugene King?
Well, clearly part of his persona is that he's older, I think 60-something, 67. He's a guy, wears his cowboy hat. He's from that sort of, mentality that wouldn't be a guy who understands, hip-hop music. I think he has already brought out the fact that he thinks this is something that young black hip-hoppers say. He said that on Al Sharpton. So when he says it, it did just
it's jarring just in the fact that it's coming out of the mouth of someone, you know, who's not in touch with that community and invariably says it wrong. But again, to me, it was, and again, I've seen it enough times. I didn't see it live. I've seen it enough times to know exactly what it was. An aside was made about, did you see this game? He starts the conversation in that regard about, did you see this game? And, wow, these Rutgers women, they were real rough-looking. And somebody chimes in, yeah, there were some real, you know, there were some real tough hoes. And then he adds, yeah, there were some nappy-headed hoes. Mm-hmm. And as that's going on, I mean, clearly they were in the mood then of, okay, we found somebody to beat up on. Let's continue to beat up on this person while we get some laughs out of it. And sure, that's cluelessness, and that's as soon as it comes out of your mouth, probably, or at least a little bit afterwards, you probably realize, oh, that was a dumb thing to say. But these are professional radio broadcasters. The guy makes millions of dollars off his expertise on knowing what to say behind a microphone. I actually think sometimes, like the caller suggests, I think to a degree it is like edgy stuff, and he knows when you go into any kind of racial area that it's going to be edgy. But his past has been that he's dodged those bullets enough, and I really don't think he really, you know, anticipates that anything he says against a group of people like these young girls from the Rutgers basketball team will ever end up biting him on the behind because he's so much more powerful than they are.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott. Mary in Sheboygan Falls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I would just like to say to Eugene Kane, I've always enjoyed your column in the Milwaukee Sentinel.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And what you said about Imus's future belonging to probably the political types that come on the show may or may not be true because, or be carried out in the future because there are four major advertisers that are pulling their advertisements from the show, Procter & Gamble, Staples, and two others that I don't remember. And so if that continues, that will be the demise of his show, I'm sure, because they're pulling it not just from his show. Two of them or three are pulling it from MSNBC.
Yeah, this Procter and Gamble.
That's the latest news, and I have to admit, I just kind of heard that this morning, and I got to admit it, you know, I was surprised. I was actually kind of shocked because I really did not see that coming, and you're right. That will have much more resonance than just these political guests. In fact, if his major advertisers continue to follow suit, Imus is dead. He's gone now. So, I mean, but that just happened, I guess, either late yesterday or today, and yeah, that is probably, I would have to amend my opinion to say that aside from the political guests, it's always about the money. So if you can't get advertisers to back you anymore, that's pretty much shit over. You know, we'll go to that big mansion on Long Island and retire now.
Yeah, I saw Procter & Gamble and Staples are on one of the latest stories I have. If there are two others, I don't even have that. They're adding on. So thank you very much, Mary, for the call. Mickey and Stoughton, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. As I've listened to this conversation, I wondered, his fine of 2 weeks off, that could just be a vacation. And I've wondered why we haven't talked about a fine in monetary terms for both his employer and himself and maybe a contribution to girls' sports.
The FCC, if they would fine because of a complaint, would actually fine the company, not Imus. Isn't that right, Eugene? Mm-hmm.
Well, I believe so. And what's interesting to me is that I've gotten word that and this might come out of the meeting. I mean, one of the reasons he's having a meeting with these young players, these female players, I believe, is because clearly they're private citizens. So he demeans them on national airways. And I've already heard talk from friends in New York that they're on the lookout for a good African-American or female attorney to put together some kind of lawsuit against Imus and MSNBC. And because the Rutgers women's team, they are not celebrities. They are not, you know, it's very hard to sue somebody if you defame or libel a celebrity. But I think, I'm no lawyer, but it seems to me, you know, there is a way to make him, the way you make people pay is through the pocketbook. So I think, and answer your question, I think all of that is still yet to come. And I would be shocked if someone doesn't come up with a way to make Imus and MSNBC pay some sort of penalty for this, which would be the best apology, or the most effective apology.
Yeah, that's a good point. Jennifer in Hartford, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a couple of comments. One, I feel that hose is certainly more offensive than nappy head, but I'm a white woman as well. So, I mean, I don't know where that would come from. I've also got to remember, you know, Happy Feet just came out, and one of the first lines in the Stevie Wonder song that is now being played over and over again because of the movie is, "I'm a nappy-headed boy," is the line of the song, and then it continues on and sings along, and they all sing along to it. I am certainly not a bigot by any means, but I didn't know who Don Imus was until this, and I'm curious, how much promotion do you think he's actually getting out of this? And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you so much.
Well, again, the nappy-headed, and I know I grew up with the Stevie Wonder song. It's a joyful song about him thinking back on when I was a nappy-headed boy. Mm-hmm. Gets back to the attitude that you as a black person can make. I mean, we can refer to each other's dark skin and, you know, big lips and all like that. And especially if you're doing it within the artistry of making a song, there's nothing offensive about that. Have someone else. This is my only thing to all the people, you know, who seem to be confused about nappy-headed or not hoes but nappy-headed. It's a physical characteristic said to demean people. Now, just think of physical characteristics of various ethnic groups, whether they're even Italian or Jewish or Polish. If someone from another race jumped on that physical characteristic, that to me is the definition of racist, stereotypical thought is. So, I mean, I would like to just do away with this attitude that nobody's offended by nappy, nor nobody should be offended by nappy-headed in the context that I misused it. Most black people don't really call each other nappy-headed. I mean, we refer to the quality of our hair as kinky or nappy, but when not in a derogatory sense like that.
Yeah, and Don Imus, maybe this is publicity you don't want?
Well, again, he was never a real big draw on television. He always had a big radio audience, but again, because it's a political year, he was clearly the favorite of a lot of political types. He had a sort of little subgenre of, he wasn't as big as Howard Stern or Rush Limbaugh, but for what was seen as smart political talk, he was getting very, very popular for that.
Yeah. I wonder if we have time for this, but I Marta in Oshkosh, we have less than a minute. Can you make your comment in less than a minute?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I have two suggestions. He should have to change his name legally to Don I Messed Up, and he should be subjected to drug tests regularly.
All right.
It works for me.
Okay. Eugene Kane, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. Had a good time.
Eugene Kane, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His piece yesterday, Imus can talk, but we don't have to listen. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing this hour. Thanks to Leo Duran for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store 1-800-747-7444. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.